Blog Talk Radio.
PRF table, possession of resources about finances. Tonight is going to be a very interesting night. I know if you're normally used to listen to this show, then you know that this is not your normal voice that you hear to start off the show. This is Brother Fisa starting off the show. JR is currently either heading to the Bahamas or already at the Bahamas on vacation. So he left me and Adia here to go ahead and start off the show and have a short discussion on controlling your finances. Adia and I felt as if, based on a lot of calls from last week that, and a lot of the comments from last week, we felt that it would be very appropriate for us to go ahead and to continue the discussion, to continue to go ahead and finish this discussion, because it didn't seem like we were finished. So, Adia, hello, how are you doing? Are you ready to start the show off?
I am. I'm doing pretty good today. Really just glad to be here. To continue just on with our conversation from last week, which was very thought-provoking and challenging, definitely in the area of our faith and trust and in what we're trusting in to get an end result. So really looking forward to a great show tonight. Thank you.
Yes, and for those that was on last week, if you were on last week, just want to do a small or short recap and just go over some of the things that we talked about. And I must tell you, my intent was to listen to the show again so that I can prepare a good recap. However, the week that I've had and even the day and time that Adia has had, neither one of us actually got to listen to the show. But some of the things that we talked about last week is we had two people call in and talk about their testimonies on how they're trusting God in their finances, how they realized that it wasn't all about the money. You know, both of the people that we had call in, both of them gave up a nice job because it was not so much as the finances as it was the peace of mind. So they came on and they gave a testimony on how they just moved out and they just stepped out and they just, you know, did what they feel God was putting on their heart. And the first one talked about how she walked away from over a $60,000 job because her supervisor wasn't really being conducive as a supervisor and laying down a good atmosphere, and it was causing her health issues. The second lady talked about how while she was going through all, you know, life was great, but she felt the need to move on. God moved her on. So both of them walked away from a good job. And then we had a couple of callers call in and talk, you know, give also some more testimonies on their situation, how they were going. And the main focus was to show that the dependency on money. As we started this conversation, as we started this dialogue, this series, we showed that there is a dependency on money. Somebody like me who doesn't really focus on a whole lot of money and focus on a lot of things that can be done without money. And then you have other people like that have shared that there is a focus on money. There is a serious focus on money. And so over the last two shows, we've shown that there is a dependency on money. It's just a matter of how we perceive that money. Is the money controlling us, or are we controlling the money? That's kind of the conversation and dialogue and the direction that we were going in on the past two nights. And as we move into tonight, the title says controlling your finances. But just like any other time that we do this, just like every other week, we're not bound to the title. We're bound to the conversation. So, Adia, do you have any opening comments before we get started?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and get started. And again, for those of you that are listening, if you want to get into the conversation, you have something you want to say, please press 1 on your dial pad. We'll see you, and then we'll pull you in and allow you to give your comments. So as we get started tonight, we're just going to just briefly just kind of begin where we ended last week. One of the things that stood out last week to me was the very first caller, when he came on board, he started talking about, he made the comment about financial wounded. I think that's what he called it. I can't remember how he said it. And what he
did
was
financial wounds.
Yeah, financial wounds. Thank you. Yes. He talked about financial wounds. And that really struck me and hit me because, I mean, if you've been listening to the past three shows, you know that I am one that I look for the value in a lot of things and doing a lot of things outside of using money. And I never realized it why I'm like that. And when he brought up his comment, one of the things that I realized is the reason why I'm that way is I grew up not having a whole lot of money, not being able to do a whole lot. And based on that, I was wounded financially. And so now I look for the things to do that don't require a lot of money. I look for the things to do that are lasting. And it's not to say that those things that require money are not as powerful or not as potent or not as beneficial, because there is a time and a place. There is an occasion for money. You can't, I mean, there are a lot of things you just can't do without money. And that's the one thing that struck out on me as we talk about that. Adi, do you have anything?
Well, what I was going to say, Feaster, I definitely liked the word that he used. I had never heard of that word the same as you. And just, I admire your transparency, because one of the things that I realize is that you have so many different, I guess, ideas or how people react to certain things is based on their situation. And a lot of times, sometimes we're not receptive to the mindset or the behaviors of people because we don't understand the situation that they were in or may currently be in or may be coming out of. So sometimes I think that it's important that we, one, develop relationships, you know, talking to you and just looking at the show that we did 2 weeks ago about dependency on money, you know, one would have thought that, okay, well, he has a job. Adia has a job, so what's the big deal? I mean, y'all both have jobs. You both know that you need money. So what's the underlying issues that's going on? And I think what we did for the listeners on last week was begin to open up a little bit more to help people to identify that sometimes we don't know what people have gone through. We don't know what they have experienced. And if we don't know those things, then we don't understand truly why people may look at the topic of money the way that they do. I'm 32, so I really don't have an idea of what it's like to struggle. I mean, as a child growing up, I know when I came home, I mean, the phone was never cut off. The lights were never disconnected. We always had food. So I don't know what it's like to identify or to relate with someone else who says, hey, I grew up and I didn't have a lot of food, or, you know, we had to eat like how my mom would say. Sometimes the cupboards were bare, let me be politically or grammatically correct. And, you know, but my mom would cook like collard greens and cornbread or I don't know, something that, but they always had, but it wasn't, you know, a meat and a vegetable and a starch like they may have had maybe at the beginning of the month, you know, when my grandfather got paid or whatever. So sometimes it's hard to understand what people's viewpoints are on money, because honestly, it's kind of a taboo subject. It's just like, hey, you know, you mind your business when it comes to my finances. But when we are honest with one another, when we are transparent with one another, we can definitely shed light on our past experiences and our background to help people understand this is why I do the things that I do. I didn't hit financial struggles until I came into the Army. You know, I wasn't used to having that large sum of money, you know, making that large sum of money every month. Didn't really, I knew how to spend, but I wasn't disciplining myself. So a lot of my heartache and pain came from my own self-infliction. So when you look at the topic that we have on tonight about, you know, controlling money and everything, it's just imperative that we understand people's background. We understand people's their history, and that will help us look at them a little bit different and love them all the more and to appreciate them because they add something to us. And I'm going to use your word, Feaster, where I say that value, because you, having gone through what you went through, can help soldiers on your job, in your community, in your neighborhood to see that because of what I went through, I know what it's like not to have. And so because I know what it's like not to have, my mindset when it comes to my resources is that I budget or I look for deals or I coupon shop or I, you know, I have a financial planner because I didn't have anything, but I really don't know what to do with the money that I have. So I think it just really helps us to deepen our relationships with people and to appreciate them and to value them, which is so important. And sometimes we don't do that because we don't want to talk about finances, because we don't want people to know that we may be good with finances or we may be horrible with our finances, regardless of how much money or how little of money we make. So that's just my 2 cents or dollar.
I was listening to what you said, and it's very interesting on what you said, because I found out why I have, as you were talking, I just found out the value, where I got my value for money on. I remember growing up, I mean, you said you never struggled growing up financially. Well, I never knew there was a financial struggle growing up. My mom did a great job of showing us how to enjoy life and not focus on money. I didn't know that, you know, raising 4 children on one check was a struggle. I had no idea. My mom would make such a big, she would make a big deal out of spending time with each other. She would make a big deal out of, we're going to have a picnic, you know, as opposed to going out and eat, you know, and just enjoy the time together. So I never knew that what she was doing was making an elaborate, making a beautiful, making a, you know, just taking a financial situation that is real but not giving it to us so that we were sharing the burden. And so that's where my value of money came in. That's why now I value more things to do without money. I value those times that I spend with my children. I value those times that I can do, the things that I can do without money. So you're right. A lot of the ways that we're brought up, that really, I mean, it goes to, you know, my major psychology. It goes to, you know, a lot of times the environment is how we act. It encompasses our behavior. It shapes and molds our behavior. And I just realized that as you was talking, that's what my value. That's how I got that value. And like I said, it's not to say that there is no, I mean, I love money. I sit here for the past 2 or 3 weeks, it's so funny, and I talk about how much I do without money. But if you go in my closet right now, see, most guys are into sports, and most guys are into race cars, and most guys are into bikes. Well, I'm a part-time pretty boy. And the reason why I say part-time, because I can't afford to do it full-time, it costs too much. I like to dress. I like to look nice. I like to eat. So that's where my money goes. I want to make sure my kitchen has the food that I want to eat. I want to make sure that my closet has the clothes that I want to wear. So I say there are a lot of things that I value and do outside of money, but the flip side to that is there are a lot of things that I want more money of. I previously had a Toyota Tundra. Let's have a moment of silence. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
You're going to talk about the Tundra Army.
I know, right? That was my dream truck. And after all the years, I finally got it. I finally got this truck. And I could not have done that 10 years ago because I could not afford that truck.
Mm-hmm.
But it took money to get that truck. And even if I was blessed with the truck, you know, a lot of us are, you know, we're talking about we're looking for a blessing and we want somebody to bless us and we want God to give it to us miraculously. Even if I was blessed with that truck, there was still gas that needed to go in the car. There was still taxes that needed to be paid on the car. There's still services. You know, that's a, it's a big truck. Those tires are not cheap. The oil change, I use synthetic oil in it simply because of all the miles and because I wanted to preserve the truck. So even if I was blessed with the truck, I still needed money to continue to enjoy the truck. You know, so, and so now it seems like I'm contradicting myself over the past 2 weeks. But what I really am saying is I never allow the money to control me. I never allowed the money to be my focal point for everything I did. If I didn't have the money or if I don't have the money, I'm not one to go to a payday check cash loan and then tell them I'm going to give up my car, just go, you know, pay a bill. That's not me. I'm willing to sacrifice and go without. I'm willing to come up with another way. That's what I'm saying. And that's what we're saying about, you know, I'm not allowing the money to control you. And I would beg and plead for, you know, if you're out there and you're listening and you have a situation where you understand the value of money, or you have a situation that explains how you value money or why you value money the way you do, please press one of your dial pad and call in and join in with us at the table. Adia, do you have anything?
Well, yeah, I just, you know, as you were talking, some thoughts that came to me, especially when you was talking about just your upbringing with your mom, is that I had no clue about anything that, you know, we dealt with as far as finances were concerned. Like I said, we came home, the lights was on, I ain't worried nothing about it. But one thing that I can say is that my mother never emphasized, and as I was listening to you, what I heard you saying was that there – and for me, it was like there was no emphasis on a particular thing. There was no emphasis placed on money. And I think that definitely plays into, like you were saying, your environment. If there is an environment where it states, you know, that having always, you know, following after money or chasing money, then I think you kind of grow up with that being your a value that you have, that you just have to get money. And that can be a positive or a negative thing, because we know people that chase after money, sometimes they'll do any and everything to get it. But if that's how they grew up and there was no positive reinforcement or there was no education on what that really means, then sometimes people that they get lost and their focus gets lost as to what the real meaning of, you know, working hard to get money or to have as much money as you want. The other thing is that, you know, like my mom, she didn't emphasize like brand names. You know, she just said, right, you know, you can have nice clothes, you take care of them. And she was very big on taking care of the stuff that you had, because it cost money for it. So whereas the emphasis wasn't necessarily placed on the money, the emphasis was placed on taking care of what you have because it cost money. You know, not that, you know, here's some, when acid wash jeans used to be in style, you know, I remember having the jacket and the jean pants and, you know, when the biker shorts used to be in style. I mean, she would buy us those things, but it was never like, you know, you had to have the $50 pair, you know, but what we had, it was still acid wash. So it was, the emphasis was taken off of the money. So I grew up not thinking, you know, that I had to have, you know, the latest fashion. I just grew up thinking that, hey, what I have is clean, my mother paid money for it, and I like it. So I think it's important that we definitely go back to our values from how we grew up with our parents or whomever raised us and factor that into where we are now, because now, you know, that we have jobs and we can afford, instead of getting a $20 pair of shoes, now we can afford to get the $50 pair of shoes. I think what we have to consider is counting the cost. Is the $50 pair of shoes going to do the same thing that the $20 pair of shoes are going to do? And which one what's the sacrifice going to be? You know, and I think sometimes when we look at the control of our finances, it's basically saying, can I have the same thing or the quality? And I think you probably heard this too, that in the military, that you can have a good, fast, or I think something when you're talking about the price, a good, fast, or cheap. You know, you can get something good, and they make it fast, but it might not last long. Or you can get something good, and it be fast, but you may have to pay for it. So when you look at the control of finances, it's just I think it boils down to the question of which one are you willing to pay for? Are you willing to pay for the quality where it's going to last you and you pay that $50? Or are you looking to be able to, you know, you just want to floss and be able to tell people, hey, I got the latest whatever, and it not last you longer? And I say that because sometimes, you know, we may, when we're looking at our finances and having control over our finances, I think what we have to also look at is the long-term effects of that. Do I continue to rent and there's no return on my investment because I'm paying somebody else's mortgage?
Right.
Or do I buy a home? Or if I throw the variable in there, do I rent and develop a plan and rent for 5 years and rent instead of a 13 or a 2,000 square foot house, I rent maybe a 1,200 square foot house where I'm only going to pay $1,000, and that additional $1,000 that I was going to pay for that 2,000 square foot house, I can take that and put away. So for the next 5 years, I basically put away $72,000. Now I can use it as a down payment to buy a home. So I think it's just a matter of how we're looking at our finances working for us. And like you said, instead of our finances controlling us, we control the finances. I'm just going to turn it back over to you because we have a caller on the line.
Yes, we do, and I'll reserve my comments till the caller makes his comment. Oh, we have a caller in queue with the last four of 1959. Welcome to the PRF table, caller.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I was the one who was talking about wealth wounds before, and I just underscore, I think in general, black people and brown people are afraid of being wealthy. And we use comments like it's easier for, you know, to get into heaven, it's easier for a person to get into heaven, a wealthy person to get into heaven than a camel through the eye of a needle. I think we use the notion of, well, gosh, you know, I'm being efficient as blockades from saying, well, wait a second, there's also statements that say, ask and you shall receive. And so we just had a Powerball that was $236 million payout. Do you think you'd be a better person or a worse person if you received that $236 million? And my statement is, well, it depends on who you are. And so if you're grounded in God, if you're grounded in faith, if you're grounded, you'd absolutely have a better life with $236 million than if you had no dollars and you're trying to find discount shoes. So I still feel like we're such as a people conflicted, and even this conversation, we're like, yes, on one side, it's good to have money, but another side, it's not. One side, like, look at the military model, but another side, when you look at the military, most of military personnel are living in poverty. So I'm like, why can't we just embrace the fact, if we're children of God, and we should claim all that is here for us to claim, why shouldn't we just embrace fully wealth, and then with that embracing, understand that we still want to live as Christians, which is, what do we do with that wealth? Because that wealth will set you up to have opportunities, freedom, choices of what you invest in, choices of organizations and churches that you help thrive. It gives you such freedom, but it seems like still as a people where we're still like so deeply conflicted that we're actually not sending a clear message to God that we actually want wealth. And we deserve wealth, and with that wealth we will be highly responsible to use it in a way that that advances his or her cause for us.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. We thank you for your comments.
That is,
please press 1 so we can pull you out of the queue. And if you feel like you want to make some comments later on, just press 1 again and we'll pull you back in, sir. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
It's interesting that he comes back and pretty much says the same thing he said last time, and I like that. I like that he makes mention of how just like he said, we are scared of being wealthy. We're scared of being wealthy, and a lot of times we do things out of fear because we feel like we can't be wealthy, or what will we do? You know, the average, and he mentioned black people or darker hue people. I'm not gonna just generalize that to one group of races. I'm gonna open this up, but I know a lot of times the people that I've talked to, the reason why they don't want all that money is not because they don't think they can enjoy it. It's not because they don't think that they deserve it. A lot of the people don't want that money because they don't want the burdens that come with it. We all have that family member or family members that, you know, as soon as you get a little money, the first thing they want to do, that they ain't talked to you in 6-7 years, but they're going to come out of the woodworks, and they don't want that burden. They don't want to have to deal with, you know, trying to decide, you know, is Cousin Bill really here because he loved me, or is Cousin Bill really here because, you know, he's trying to get some money? And I think a lot of times that was what's really going on. We have another caller with the last 4 of 2023. Welcome to the PR table.
Hello, how are y'all?
All right,
good.
How are you?
How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
We're doing fine.
I just wanted to say that not everybody is afraid of wealth, or most people, I think, are not afraid of wealth. I think there are two issues. Sometimes, more times than not, they don't know how to gain it and handle it when they get it. Because for most brown or black people, I'm going to say, it's not taught from youth. The other categories, a lot of in my experience, they learn about finances and investment and all of those types of things from childhood. They learn from their parents' example, their grandparents' example, and so all of that stuff gets passed down to generations, through generations. Now, on the brown and black side, we, you know, historically in this country, we didn't have that to pass down. So now at this point, we've not had it for a long time, so it's hard to learn it. Now, the ones that do break out and learn it, it is a burden. It is a burden for them to have it because you either have the others with their hand out. When you try to teach them to fish, they don't want to learn how to fish. They want to just, they just want you to give them a fish. So I've actually had a family member of mine tell me, and I'm by no means wealthy. You know, I'm handled. I can take care of, you know, any finances that I need to have. So, you know, monetarily, not so wealthy, but I am wealthy in other ways, you know. But I had a family member tell me, that's what you get for having money. And I'm like, why is it that, you know, I don't get those phone calls from some family members unless they are in financial straits?
Right.
And the response was, that's what you get for having money. And I'm like, I have bills too, and I'm by no means, you know, ready to kick back and just enjoy life, you know. So, but because I actually take time and plan out and think about what I want to do financially, and I'm a good steward of my money, they feel like it's my responsibility to take care of them whenever they have a problem. So they feel entitled to, you know, if I gain a little bit of extra, they feel entitled to it. So I think to sum it up, I think that people do want it. They do want to not be stressed about where the next bill the money for the next bill is coming from, or having to make a dollar out of 15 cents every time. But
right.
when you cross that bridge, if you get to that point, then it becomes a burden,
mm-hmm.
because you're not only carrying who you primarily carry, you have to start, or other people think that you have to carry them too. And if you
mm-hmm.
don't do it, then you're guilted and shunned from some people because you don't do it. So that's my comment.
Well, we thank
Definitely
you for your
thank
comment.
Thank you for your comment.
Yeah, great comments. We've had two great comments tonight. Again, push one on your dial pad so we can pull you out of the queue. And if you have another comment you would like to come back on, just please push one again and we'll pull you back in. Adia, before I turn it over to you, I just want to say one short, hopefully it's short. You know how I get on the tangent sometimes. I just want to say one short thing. She made mention of how we of darker hue have not received the training growing up to budget and learn how to manage our money and save and plan. And I, you know, for y'all that are normal listeners, know that me and Adia are both in the military. And I'm not sure if you know that I'm an NCO and a D is an officer. That's two totally different realms of responsibility. And both of us have some type of professional development that is designed to enhance our career, to progress us along. And one of the complaints that we've had for years in the NCO realm is that when we look at some of the things that the officers talk about during their professional development, they're looking at stuff outside of, you know, tactical, how to, you know, move a squad, how to do movement, how to do tactical movement, how to do all that stuff. But they're looking at other things to dealing with life. And as the caller was talking, I began to think like that. And what popped in my head was my last duty station, the argument was, you know, when are we going to make the change? When are we going to make the change? When are we going to stop that dreaded cycle of nobody is teaching anybody? At some point, we need to break that cycle. You know, and that's kind of the direction we go here on the PRF table. And by no means am I, you know, shunning the caller that just said, but I'm just saying, when do we break that cycle? When do we, me as a father of two, you know, one in college and one in elementary school, when do I break that cycle and sit my daughter down and we learn together? If that's what it takes, we learn together. Baby, I didn't know how to learn how to finance. Matter of fact, what I told my daughter was I was not taught how to finance. The only reason why we have what we have is I married someone who is a great person that knows how to budget and finance. So that's how I'm breaking the cycle, but I'm also learning from my wife. So that's what I want to say as we move on. When do we make that change? Because if we continue to live in the same excuses, if we continue to ride on the same issues, if we continue to say the same things, then we will continue to be the same way. But we're in the information age. I said sure, I'm sorry. We're in the information age. And as we're in this information age, I mean, Money Matters, Wall Street Journal, all these avenues, how many news channels are out there with a ticker tape rolling across the bottom? You have financial shows that we can listen into. So when are we going to break that cycle? We no longer have that excuse anymore that I was not taught.
Mm-hmm.
We no longer have that excuse that my mama didn't show me, my dad didn't show me. Because at any point, we can pull up our internet, and as we spend all day on Facebook or Twitter or Words with Friends, all these other things that we do, YouTube, whatever we do, we can also turn to Google, and I'm endorsing a whole lot of stuff. We ain't getting paid for this, but anyway. But we can also go to Google and type in financial matters, and just Google's a slot of web pages will come up. Begin to break that cycle. So I'm gonna stop right there, D, and let you go ahead.
Well, I really like what the first caller said, that Black and Brown people are scared of wealth, And to a certain extent, I'm going to say I agree with him. I think it also is not just limited to black and brown people. I read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. And one thing that he said is that for people who did not grow up with without any financial woes, they will quickly say that they, you know, hey, if somebody walked up to you and said they were going to give you $1 million, would you take it? And the answer would always be yes, because that's instant riches right there. You are a one millionaire. The reality is that when it happens, most people get scared and they start to doubt, is this for real? Now, they've been talking all their life, man, if I was rich, if I was a millionaire, I'd do this. But then when the reality presents itself, they're scared. Fear begins to creep in. Doubt begins to creep in. And so we can talk about how if we had this large sum of money, what we would do. But the reality is that because we didn't have it, it's easier to talk about something that you've never had, because you can stay in that fantasy world. And never ever be challenged. The other thing that I want to say is, you know, there was an old song that talked about more money, more problems, and this is going to the second caller. That song, I would not agree with it to a certain extent. I think what is key is discipline and education, and the caller, the last caller, she definitely alluded to that. She talked about being disciplined and being educated. What I would like to take it a step further is that sometimes, and I'm just a firm believer because I love my heritage. I think we have a rich heritage as black people, African Americans, whatever you want to call yourself. But what we forget is our history does not start in America. Our history extends all the way back to Africa, when we were queens and kings, where we were over tribes, where we had government systems already set up, to where we were dealing with astronomy, math. We had mathematicians, scientists. We had universities in Timbuktu. And what I think is happening is that we think that our history starts in America, and it does not. Our history far exceeds the existence of America. We have a rich history. That's why there's so many people that go to Africa with finding diamonds. I read a story about children in a village. They were playing with this big stone. And this is a true story. And this guy comes over and says, hey, can I – he was a person who looks up, who finds gems, I don't know, archaeologist or whatever he was. And so he realized when he took it back, it was an 80-carat diamond. Of course, when the news got out that there was diamonds in that area, people flocked there. We come from a heritage, a lineage where we were wealthy people. Now, I don't want people to think that, oh, my goodness, I'm going to find my riches. But we come from that. And so that's what we have to educate ourselves on first, is that the poverty mentality that a lot of black people have today stems from slavery in America. But when you go past that, when you go through that impasse or that glass ceiling, you will understand that we are a wealthy people, always have been and always will be. And so we got to have discipline and education that extends beyond slavery. The other thing is that when you look at our school system compared to other countries, these countries are preparing their children with their finances. Our school system does not teach you about budgeting. They may be starting it now. I don't know. But I went to school all my life in the United States, and we did not have a curriculum that was tailored to teaching children about, hey, once you get out of high school, because some people may not go to college, some people may get a job, may go into the army, or, I don't know, start their own business. But they don't teach classes that teaches you about budgeting and how to buy a house and different things like that. You look over in Germany, they actually have, as a part of their curriculum, they're teaching these children about vocational jobs so that when they graduate from high school, they have a job. There's a difference, one, in our just our United States education system that is in far comparison to other countries. It's not right. It's not wrong. It's different, though. So there's a task at hand that we as parents, as educators, as mentors, that we have to do for our children. The other thing that we have to also consider is the caller said, you know, that her family member made a comment. And I looked at it like that's like a curse, saying that that's what you get for having money. That goes back to that poverty mentality. As long as we speak things like that, it's not saying that you a hater, but as long as we speak stuff like that, it's like you're basically speaking a curse over somebody's life, that because they have money, whether it's whether they're a thousandaire or a hundredaire, I don't know if that made sense. But we would tell somebody, that's what you get? Like, it's a curse? I mean, if anything, we should be excited and congratulating one another. And, I mean, the negative connotation that we put on the fact that people have money is ridiculous. I mean, I would love to. Y'all know I just got comfortable saying that I love money. I thought it, I was going to be cursed with a what? Curse, because I said I love money. I thought it was I was going to be out of love and relationship with the Lord himself because I said that. But now walking in that freedom, it definitely helps me to understand, like the first caller was saying, is that if I am wealthy, what am I going to do with it? And as I educate myself and am able to freely talk about it and have a plan, I think that we'll go into looking at money differently to where it will not control us. So for that person who won those millions of dollars, only thing that I can hope for them is that they hire a financial planner and have a plan on what it is that they want to do with that money. Because if you've never had millions of dollars before, you might need to invest a couple of thousands of dollars into a financial planner so they can help you with your money because you don't know how to handle it. And that's the reality. We don't want to be wealthy because we're actually scared that we know that we don't know how to handle it. But we fool ourselves into thinking that we would do all of these grand things when we probably will just blow it because we've never had it before and we've lived in a fantasy because we don't know our history. We don't know how wealthy we are, because we allow the poverty mentality that we've experienced from slavery to still be our driving force, so we can't control our money. So the more money we have, the more problems we have. And then you have people saying things like, that's what you get. And that's all I really want to say for right now, because I've been talking for a while and we might have a caller in the queue.
No, we don't. One of the things that I picked up out of that really just struck me, and it didn't hit me, you know, when you first said it, but it's interesting that, and I'm not sure, and let me ask you a question, dear. Have you ever said, I love my husband? Have you ever said, I love my husband? Have you ever said, I love my job?
Yes, and I love my job.
Have you ever said, I love my children?
Yes.
What about that old nice car you have? Have you ever said you love that car?
Yeah, I love Cadillacs. They are like the best cars ever. I'm so sorry. Yes.
So, look, this is interesting. I find this very, very, very interesting. Now, here we are, a car, your children, your husband, you freely, your job, said over years, because you've been married a while, you've been in the army a while, you freely said you love these things, and you love the Lord, and you've expressed that you love the Lord. But when it comes to money, and I've seen the way you dress, and I've seen your car, and I've seen your house, you don't buy cheap stuff. You know, you buy stuff of quality, And sometimes quality costs money. So it's funny how you can love all these other things, however, you struggle. And it took you to the age of 32 to be able to say that you love money. And what I pulled out of that was what the last call, the second caller was saying about education and what you were saying about education, being educated, being taught, knowing the difference between, you know, loving money, being in love with money, and being, I'm going to change the word here, in lust with money. So let me explain what I mean when I say, because we have such a nasty connotation on the word lust, when not all lust is negative. We mostly look at the word lust and we think of something sexual. But the same, but lust is a strong desire for something. It could be negative or positive, however we see it. So the difference between the way you felt before and the way you felt now was, and I'm just throwing this out there, and if I'm wrong, please correct me, you were in the impression that, you know, loving money was equivalent to lusting money. And we understand that when we lust something, we go out of our way to get it. We go through the extreme to get it. We will cross obstacles. Nothing stops us when we have that lust for something. A lot of times, and I'm going to go to the negative connotation of the word lust so we all can relate to it. A lot of times when we lust something, it consumes us. It draws us down. So if you're lusting money and it's consuming you and it's drawing you down, then yes, that's what we're talking about tonight. That's what we're saying, not let the money control you, but you control the money. There's nothing wrong with saying that you love money, but when the money controls you, when you will do anything to get that money, that's kind of the direction that we're going. And we have a call in the queue, and we're going to go ahead and pull you in. Caller, last 46453, welcome to PRF Table. You're now on air.
Hi, I'm just a little nervous, but anyway, a friend of mine has sent me your information, and I'm glad. This is my first time listening, and a lot of times we, speaking of lust, it'd be a lot of negative things that pull us away from focusing on saving our own money. Like, you know, just pornography, just a whole lot of things that causes us to lose focus so that we can save our money. And like right now, I'm not working. My husband is the only one that's working, but I'm better with the finances. So right now, I'm taking, you know, handling the finances, and it's better, you know, whoever do the job best just runs with it. And, you know, I'm about to finish school so I can get a job too, but it's hard sometimes getting out of debt, which is one income, but I'm, you know, asking God to help me and show me, and I'm glad that I was able to come in on listening tonight, because I never heard of this. This is good. This is good information, and it's helping me to do what I'm already doing. And that's all I have.
Well, we thank you. Could you ask me one thing before you drop off?
Yes. Uh huh.
How did you find out about the show?
Dunlap, my half brother Nate Dunlap had texted me the information, and I will be sending your information to some more of my friends. I'm here in Maryland, so and for
we are very grateful that you did decide to listen, and we're very grateful that you even gave us your comment. Again, push one and you'll pull out of the queue. And if you feel like you want to say have another comment, press one and we'll pull you back in. Again, thank you for your comment.
Okay.
Before we go and me and Dia go on our comment, we have one more caller in queue. Caller last four, 0945. You're now on air. Welcome to the PRF table.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Good evening, rather.
It all works. Welcome to the PRF table.
Thank you. I've been listening to the comments on the air. This is my first time listening to the program, and I really like the concept. Going back to a couple of conversations before, it is about education and awareness. And so it's crucial as a parent to teach your children what they need to know so when they get on their own, they'll know what to do. And whether they use it or not is one thing, but as a parent, you're responsible for teaching them what they need to know when they get out on their own. And so if a parent is lacking in an area, some cases it could be finances, something, it could be education, there's still a push for the child to want to know what they want to do better for themselves that their parents couldn't do for them. When we talk about finances, a lot of children grow up not knowing about finances or how bills are paid, or they just know when mama gets paid or daddy gets paid, we got money in the house. So it's
right.
Important to include children in decisions about when money comes in, how it's allocated, how it's paid, and why you can do some things and why you can't, so that they grow up understanding there's more to it than just mom and daddy got paid today.
Right.
So I like this format, I like this concept of awareness, and I will be sharing this with other people that I feel might benefit from this program and these comments.
Well, we thank you
wow.
for calling in, and we thank you for sharing your comments. Again, push one and you'll fall off the queue, and if you want to make any more additional comments, feel free to push one again and we'll pull you back in. Again, thank you for your comments. We seem to
that
have
was really amazing.
I know. I really want to make comments on that. My voice is taken down, but we have one more caller in queue, so we've seen that stirred up the pot. So we're going to go ahead and pull in the next caller we have in queue. Caller last four, 2023. Welcome to the PRF table. You're now on air.
Hi, it's me again.
Hello,
I just wanted to
back.
Mention this picture that I've that just popped up on my screen. It's very pertinent to this conversation, because it shows just the torso of a black man. Obviously, it's a black man, and he has a chain around his neck, or a collar around his neck, a metal collar with three chains, and then they're connected to his arms. And the person who posted it asked, "What does this picture say to you?" Well, the person that's in the chains has a paintbrush, and he's painting the chains gold. So they're iron chains, and he's painting them gold. So, you know, when I saw it already jumped out at me. It spoke to me before I even read him asking to tell him what it meant to me. And that is very pertinent to some of what Adia was saying earlier, that, you know, you don't necessarily need the name brand. You just need your basic needs met. So to me, that picture shows that the very thing that keeps you bound, we turn it around. Some people turn it around and glamorize it.
Mm.
So instead of breaking free of the chains, we're trying to dress it up.
Mm.
So again, that goes back to education.
Mm.
I'm going to reiterate the education. So if your child is taught about budgeting, if they're taught about credit cards, you know, because my nieces and nephews, I used to buy them little gift cards in Walmart. And I would let them swipe their own card and let them see when the money ran out on the gift card that the card didn't work anymore. Because they used to always say, I'm like, oh, you can't, I don't have any money, you know, because they want something frivolous. And I'm like, I'm not buying that. I don't have any money to waste on that. And they're like, use your card. You have a card. I've seen it in your wallet. And I'm like, just because I have a card doesn't mean there's money on there. Now, I did have
mm-hmm.
money. But I just want to teach them, you know, that, you know, that plastic, you know, that ends sometimes too. So I started buying them little gift cards and letting them swipe it themselves. And so when it got to zero balance, or they only had 25 cents on there and it was a dollar for whatever they wanted, then I'm like, oh, you can't have that because you don't have enough money. And I let them learn the lesson. So teaching is the biggest thing, teaching them when they're young and then also teaching the older generations to break the cycles and break out of, you know, just because, you know, their mother had to make a dollar out of 15 cents or grandma had to make a dollar out of 15 cents doesn't mean that you have to continue with those same habits that made them have to make a dollar out of 15 cents. So if you break, you know, the habit, you may not be able to put food on the table, but your child is walking around with a $100 pair of shoes. You know, the priorities are out of order.
Right.
So it all feeds back into education. And so I just wanted to mention that picture and then reiterate the education part.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I just have a question for you. Would you be able to find me on Facebook and send me that picture?
Send you my picture?
My name is, the picture with the picture talked about.
Yeah, I sure can.
My
can
name is, first
the,
name is.
I can post it on the web page, too, for if it lets me.
Okay.
Well, Carla, we thank you again.
That was amazing. Yes.
Oh, man. Go ahead, Adia. I'm going to let you go first.
That was it. I mean, the only thing I can say is that you're still in bondage. No matter how you look at it, you're still in bondage. And I definitely like the example that she's giving, you know, to her nieces and nephews. I mean, I do the same thing with my children. My son got him a debit card to help him kind of just, you know, understand how money works, and he sees it now. When you make those decisions, am I going to buy a hat or am I going to save my money? You know, he even misplaced his card, and I wouldn't get him another one for, like, the entire summer because I needed him to understand that had value on it. It's, you know, it's not a credit card to where, you know, there's an annual, you know, like a monthly percentage on it or rate or whatever, but it still has value. So if you're going to treat it as if it's just, you know, like some card or something where you just swipe it and you get to eat, well, then I need you to understand. So I think it's very important, you know, and I really like that she's teaching them now. I've even, you know, went as far as even went further with giving my children cash, like dollar bills, to where, you know, here's $20 and this is it. So that they understand, because there's a psychological concept that we can swipe a card and we don't really think about, you know, we're not bringing our checkbooks and writing in the amount that we spend and balancing our checkbook at that very moment. But the psychological mindset is that if I have cash in my hand, something tangible, I'll think faster and more deliberately about how I'm going to spend my money. And so whereas I would swipe my card because I know the money is there, if I take cash out and give myself $100 to spend, you know, over the weekend, chances are is that I'm probably going to have money left over because I don't want to spend it all, because that's pretty much my mind is telling me, hey, that's all you got. So I would just like to challenge the callers out there, try it for a day. Try just going an entire day without swiping your card and go to the ATM machine or to the bank and take some money out and see how much more conscious you are about your spending as opposed to swiping your debit or your credit card if that's what you prefer to use. And that's all that I want to say, and just turn it back over to you, Feaster.
Well, before I get into my comments, I want to say something about that. And you know, sometimes we don't always agree. I will tell you that there are some of us out there that, honestly, the debit card holds me back from spending so much money, because it took me years. You know, my mom used to tell me when I was growing up, and I think even my grandma used to say it all the time, that money just burned a hole in your pocket. I couldn't keep money in my pocket. I had to get it and spend it. So as I got older, when we got to the debit card, not the checks, because, oh, gosh, that was a beast of a different color. But when we got to the debit card, I was able to be a better budgeter. I was able to make better decisions in my purchases. So callers, as you're, I mean, not callers, but listeners, as you're out there and you listen to Adia, be mindful that if this does not work for you, don't keep trying it. You know, if you find out you're like me, that as soon as you get the money in your pocket, you got to spend it, well, that's not a good trick for you. Maybe you can do a combination of two, as in get a Visa kit, get a gift card, put the money on there, and then that's the only money that you spend. So find out what works for you, what form of what you say works for you. Because me personally, oh, I come back with, oh, gosh, some shoes, a couple of shirts, and all that good stuff. So, but one of the things that I wanted to say was, go ahead, Adia.
I was going to say, but what I'm saying is you're putting yourself on a budget. And I'm not going to ask anybody if they budget, because it mm-hmm. really is not relevant, but it will definitely make you ask yourself the question, am I budgeting? Because what I'm referring to is that it's a budget. You're putting yourself on the budget that for a day you may say, I'm only going to take out $50, and it's just a test. I'm going to take out $50 today instead of swiping my car and make sure that I got enough gas to get to and fro back to work. But $50 is all that I have to spend today. And the psychological mindset is that because that's all that you have, that you have to spend, the likelihood of you just blowing through it because that's all that you have will definitely begin to decrease. Now, if you go and take $500 out the bank for one day, yeah, you're going to probably spend it. But when you give yourself a budget and you put together a plan, now we're talking about education and then the application of what we learned, and you give yourself, right, put together a plan and then give yourself a budget on today, I'm only going to spend $20 because that's all I have in my pocket and I can't use my debit ATM credit card, the likelihood of you spending that entire $20 is definitely going to change because you realize there is no tapping into another resource. That $20 is all that you have. So you can't have any extra money within your reach because now your finances are controlling you instead of you controlling it, because the discipline part of it. And I think the discipline part is probably more so than putting together the actual plan. But that's just to be, you know. So I'm pushing.
Oh, you're all right. You're all right. I want to go back to the picture that the caller talks about the man with the chains around his neck and he was painting them gold. It's interesting because as I listen to you and her talk about your interpretation of that picture, that is not the interpretation that I got of the picture. And it was actually something totally different. And when y'all said that, it just opened my mind up and my eyesight up to the different side of what I was thinking. But what I was thinking was he was making the best out of his situation. Y'all were saying that he's still in bondage. He's still in bondage. But what I was seeing simply was he was making the best out of his situation. Not that he was not trying to get out of bondage, but he's not allowing the bondage to control him. He's painting them gold. In other words, not that I'm putting value on these, but I'm not going to let them control me. Yes, I'm in this bondage. Yes, these chains are here. But matter of fact, I don't know if y'all have seen the movie Hurricane with Denzel Washington. And one of the things that he did was he said that the prison system is designed for you to hate being in prison. It's designed for you to hate being in your cell. So what he did was he made himself comfortable in his cell so that he changed the mentality of where he was at. And what I learned from that was he didn't allow himself to be in bondage with the things that were binding him. I hope I'm not making that too confusing. And it kind of goes to this picture that I've seen on Facebook, and it was a quote. I don't know if it was an actual quote, but it was a picture of Harriet Tubman, and the caption says, "If I could have convinced more people they were slaves, I could have delivered more people. I could have set more people free," or something like that. And that's kind of what I'm looking at as in, you know, do you even know, man, and we're at the end of the show and now we're going this direction. Do you even know that you are in bondage? Do you even know, are you even aware of it? Because some of us are painting our chains gold and we don't even know that these are bondage. But then some of us are painting the chains gold. We know that we're in bondage, but we're allowing the chains to bind us. Does it make sense to this?
I think it makes sense. I think that's, you know, what the caller, what she was alluding to was that there was this, and I'll say the use the word again, this fantasy. I'm still bound. However, if I just paint the chains gold, I'm still bound, but maybe there's a chance that by me painting these chains gold, I won't be bound anymore. So there's still, and this is just to Adia, there's still this false perception that one is free, but the fantasy part of it, or the, I guess the hopeful part of it, which is not, I don't think is a bad thing, is that if I do this, then maybe the bondage that I'm up under is not really as bad as it seems. But the fact is that you're still in bondage. And right. I think that's the quote that you gave was awesome, because you got people, and I mean, let's just be honest. You have people who, where I lived at in North Carolina growing up for like 3 or 4 years, you know, everybody had a car. Seriously. Everybody had a car. Even some of them, you know, in high school had a car. My mom didn't get me a car, nor did she get me licensed, because she said she didn't want her insurance to go up because I was an inexperienced driver. Mm. But when you look at the number of people who didn't even own a home, but yet they got a Escalade sitting in their yard, it's just like, do you not understand what's really going on? You know, they got the latest, you know, game system, got the latest coach purse, but yet and still they on welfare, or
right.
They, you know, low income housing, or they working for minimum wage, and so it's just the mindset. And it's like I said, it's not that it's wrong, but it goes back to the education, and that's what's freeing. That's what's liberating, is that when I know something, now I can operate in a different light. And I think so for some people, they're not operating in that different light, because as long as what they know is, hey, I was able to spend $200 to get me a pair of Jordans. But then at the end of the week, they don't got no money.
Right.
Or I get paid every week and I can't keep gas in my car.
Right.
And you work, you know what I'm saying? You 12 miles away from your job, but you can't even keep gas in your car, and you get paid every week. It's things like that that we got to begin to look at, is how can somebody allow for themselves to be in bondage and then paint the chains gold? You just a person in bondage with some gold around your neck that ain't even real because you painted it on there. I guess that's how I look at it, but I love what you said about that hope, because for that man, for a lot of men, that gives them hope that one day they won't be bound in the chains. But the question is, how do I get free? How do I get free? Mm. Painting these chains gold going to free me? Or is it just going to give me the hope that the freedom will come? That's what we got to ask ourselves. How do I get free? Turning it over to you, cousin.
Man, I tell you what, it seems like we've turned at the very end of the show. We've come to our last 2 minutes of the show, and I would tell you that is a great place to end, because the question is, how do I get free? Do the chains bind me? Do the chains hold me? Or do I hold the chains? You know, what is binding me? Because there are some people without chains on, and we are inbound. That's our show for tonight. Yes. We thank you for listening. We definitely thank all the callers that came in and gave us great insight. And we're definitely going to pray, and maybe that's the direction that we'll go in next week. So, again, we thank you for listening to the PRF Table. We'll see you again next week, same time, same station. I'm going to end with a song. A change is going to come because that's what we're talking about. Have a good night. Thank you for coming out. God bless.
And I know a change is gonna come. Though it may be hard right now, I'll press on. Anyhow, your dreams can become reality only you believe. Yes, look beyond the clouds in the sky. Spread your wings and fly. Where you're gonna be. Pull your head out in the air.